That's okay, don't worry.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Founders Grip. Today we have Matt Hussey, the founder of Decrypt at Consensus Mesh. Hi Matt, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good too. So Matt, how about we start off with like you telling us about your work experience and you sharing a brief background of yourself.
For sure. So yes, my name's Matt. My career is what I think most people would describe as a portfolio career, not by choice, more by design. So I started out about 15 years ago. I trained to be a journalist in London. And I got my first job in a print magazine here in London, and I worked there for 3 years and learned a lot, and then sort of felt kind of the world of digital approaching, and I left the print world, started freelancing, first of all with lots of other magazines in the UK, some newspapers as well. And then slowly got pulled into sort of like helping projects kind of launch and establish itself. So I worked on the launch and the first sort of year of Wired magazine in the UK. I also worked on the launch of an e-commerce meets editorial site called Mr. Porter. And then I got pulled in to work on some websites as a kind of news editor, and I did that for a few years, and then I went back to freelancing and worked on some other bits and pieces. I then created my own startup, my first startup, called Provenance, which was a blockchain transparency supply chain project, which is still going. I worked on that for a good year, and then I left there to focus more on writing and content. I went to the Next Web, it's a big technology website, and became the editor-in-chief there and ran that for a while. And then moved on again, and then kind of sort of started to see this sort of new technology emerging called blockchain and a decentralized web. And after a couple of little bits and pieces and agencies and doing creative work for people like Samsung and stuff like that, and I'm working with Jimmy Wales on helping define and establish his news site called Wiki Tribune. I joined two other guys in creating an education startup called Lightpaper, which was the idea was to teach people about blockchain and crypto in a beautiful, simple, elegant way. And then not long after that, we were acquired by Consensus, which is a big blockchain enterprise studio that backs emerging projects in the space. And 3 years later, here we are, from 0 to 11 million monthly active users, a workforce all over the world, and lots of really interesting projects and things happening all the time, and there's never a dull moment in the job. And so that kind of takes us up to the present day.
Well, you know, my expressions, you can't see them right now, but they're legitly colon O right now. What a portfolio have you got yourself. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I love that. Okay, so
thank you.
Matt, how did you incorporate the whole idea of remote in your mode of working? And also, can you share like a bit about your setup, like the story behind your setup? What was the journey like? Ups and downs, your love-hate relationship with your startup? Like, tell me everything.
Tell you everything. Okay. So I'll do the remote work question first. So I came from where my career started was very much in a world that didn't like remote work. There was, I guess, a mistrust of it. The idea was that people couldn't be trusted to work independently. There was also a slight sort of technological limitation there with the terms. There wasn't things like Slack or Microsoft Teams and things like that. So it was frowned upon in the beginning. And I think that's why I did freelancing, because it was sort of a version of that, whereby you didn't have to work in an office. You could work from anywhere. And you would just file your copy and then that'd be it. remote working really kind of came to fruition for me in about 2014 when I was working at the NextWeb, and their headquarters were in Amsterdam, but the editorial team were all over the world. And so there was a kind of belief that you could be trusted and that you could self-regulate and get up for work on time and put in a day's work. So that's where it really kind of like hit home for me. And ever since then, I've never really worked in an office full time since. I've done like, you know, bits and pieces of project work, but nothing quite like the old days of, you know, commuting to an office 9 to 5 and being IRL with everybody you work with. In terms of how Decrypt works, again, yeah, we are what's, you know, to use a buzzword, called a decentralized company. So we have no fixed address or abode. I'm based in London. My other co-founders are in Paris, California. We have our teams in Israel, upstate New York, Berlin, South America. We've got some guys down in South America for our Spanish site. So it's all very remote. And the way that kind of that set up is that we've, you know, juggling time zones is obviously a challenge. So juggling kind of meetings where we all get together and talk is really, really a big focus for us as a company. And we always try to make sure we have several touch points during the week, especially at the beginning and at the end, to kind of like help people kind of digest and process what's happened. Yeah, it's not without its challenges. It's not without, you know, both from a kind of practical perspective, a cultural perspective. You know, there's I am a bit of a hobbyist in the sort of psychology department, and I'm endlessly fascinated by how culture affects how people are in the workplace. And that's something that I've experienced in multiple jobs across my career, and I'm starting to understand it in more detail now. So that's a challenge. You know, some people are quite extroverted. Some people like Zoom, some people don't. Some people like to work alone. Some people like to talk, and I like to talk their way through problems. Other people like to sit and work through them on their own. So all that stuff kind of comes out in this sort of great remote working experiment. Obviously COVID, it didn't really affect us at all, because the way we all worked was fairly independently. You know, I'd sometimes go to a co-working space in London to be amongst other people, to not be at home so much. It's been surprisingly agile in its ability to kind of pop up anywhere. We've had people travel and work. My CTO has traveled extensively all over the world. My product manager, you know, she's from Israel. She's currently traveling around Mexico and working too. So yeah, I'm actually regretting not taking more advantage of that, if I'm honest, but that's a different story altogether.
Well, that's very interesting. Like, I think Decrypt and Gabriel has that in common. We were remote day one as well. So yeah, yeah. Like, the COVID did not affect us at all either. So speaking of what do you think is the future of remote employment? Do you think it's here to stay or it's going to change? And if you think it's here to stay, do you have any tips and tricks for other founders and CEOs and all to make it more effective?
Yeah, for sure. So absolutely remote working is here to stay. You know, we work in the blockchain cryptocurrency sphere, and when you look at jobs boards, I'd say 70% of the jobs are all remote, you know, that are being advertised at the moment, with much fewer, you know, either in region specific as in America or Europe for time zone purposes, or, you know, there's a critical reason why they have to be in a city. So it's very much here to stay. I think what COVID did is take the ideas that are very familiar in the crypto space, very familiar in, you know, the engineering space and the CTO space, and they brought it out to a bigger group of people and showed them that it can work, right? And showed that people can be trusted to do sales calls, can be trusted to do HR calls, can be trusted to do legal calls. Like, I think what COVID really did, it gave remote working an opportunity to be tried by people who hadn't tried it before. But it's not all, you know, smooth sailing with remote work. I think, you know, something I touched upon earlier, people will work differently when they're at home. Like one thing we've found is the idea of getting people to stick to a 9 to 6 working day hasn't really applied. Like for talking from my own personal experience, I'm somebody who's most productive in the early mornings. So, you know, I'll get up at 5 a.m. and spend 2 hours like taking my dog out for the walk and going to the gym. And then I'll start work, you know, around 7. But I have members of my team who are very nocturnal and like to work late at night and won't really get going till the afternoon. And I'm always a believer in finding a way of getting the best out of your team rather than making your team conform to what you think is best. So having that kind of flexibility, and I think in the flexibility, what's more important is communicating that. So when you're working with teams, I think on top of like, you know, hey, welcome to the team. Here's like the stacks that we work in. Like here's how this works and this works. I think it needs to be a kind of a more of a conversation around like, how do you like to work? Like, are you somebody who works best in the morning, in the evening? You know, like what time zone, how does that affect like the time zone difference? How do we communicate like when we're not online together? Asking those questions of people who are working remotely, I think, is super important, because what will happen is you'll have a few people who like to work a certain way, and then they will over time slowly make everyone work that way too. And I think that can make people feel like overwhelmed. You know, a topic that comes up a lot in our team is Zoom fatigue, where the idea of too many Zoom calls make people feel a little bit like exhausted and worn out. And the psychology behind that is fascinating. That's another topic for another time. But yeah, there's a way of working remotely that has to be kind of established early and then has to be revisited often, because it's inevitable with remote teams that the way people work will slightly change and people will adapt to others. But that may not be what's best for the team. So it's about constantly tweaking and asking people to be honest and to share how they feel about the way they're working, and is there a better way for them to work that gets more out of them and they feel more productive, or yeah, better work-life balance. Something that COVID has really brought into sharp focus is that work-life balance. So to summarize that all, I'd say it's communicating with each other in a way where you ask people how they feel and what they want and how they work, and rather than assume everyone works the same.
True. Communication is very important. Very important. That's, I think, what keeps the team together. So yeah, I totally agree with that. And also, I kind of need some of your willpower, because I need to wake up in the morning too, and I need to work out as well. I totally love that, how you're like, you know, you have your priorities set. That's amazing. Okay, moving on to the last question. So there are companies like Gaper that help develop, build, and scale products, especially for startups. How important do you think such setups are in the startup world and for founders looking to quickly hire smart?
Oh, like hiring like engineering talent is a nightmare, like at the best of times. Because on top of other things I've just described, you know, the cultural differences, time zones, how people like to work, how people communicate, whether people like doing Zoom meetings or not, you also have like the kind of A, their kind of technical abilities, and B, like where they are in their kind of careers. So like, I think because like the engineers and people like that of that ilk are so vital for startups, like having the right person in that role at the right time, I can say with great confidence, it makes or breaks a team. My first startup, we brought in a team of 3 engineers, and it didn't work because they wanted to build what they wanted to build, and they didn't really want to take direction from people who are non-technical. And And it quickly kind of fell out. So finding the right talent and having someone help do that, I think is so vital, because for people, especially for non-technical founders who are looking to kind of acquire that talent, who may not have a grasp of the language that tech talent speaks, or able to define explicitly what the role involves, I think that's where, you know, companies like Gaper could be really helpful, because it helps them, those non-technical founders, and I include myself in that group, be able to talk to these people and be able to articulate what they want them to do, and then get those people to tell us what they can do and what they're capable of and what their passion is, you know, above all else, you know, an interest in the subject is so helpful. And I think, you know, with you guys doing that work and helping us understand who these people are and what they want to do is super vital.
Thank you for the kind words, Matt. Well,
you're very welcome.
Absolute pleasure having you here today. Thank you so much. Thank you so much about sharing so many nice tips with us and advising other people. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you too.
Well, I hope you have a nice day ahead.
You too.
Thank you. Bye.